Today on the Illini Inquirer podcast, we got a fun one for you to preview Illinois' season opener. Our coach, Matt Pistol, longtime IHSA head coach, he joins us to break down what to expect out of Bobby Houck's defense. We break down the X's and O's, try to explain it to the layperson fan out there. I've been trying to learn all of this too, but Matt does a great job of presenting what this defense will look like, what changes from last year, and what are these new positions, the Mike linebacker, the chief, how are they deployed? Great stuff from Matt Pistol. And then Joey Wagner joins me to preview Illinois versus UAB. We talk a little bit about UAB, what we want to see from the Illinois offense and defense, our picks to click, and our bold predictions. Let's get you ready for Illinois UAB week one, finally here. That's next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Welcome to the Illini Inquirer podcast.
All right, time to bring in the coach. It's Matt Pistol. People know him on the board. He's our coach over on the VIP board, and we love talking X's and O's with Matt. And we wanted to dive into this defense because, Matt, I know you have done that here recently. How are you, buddy? Good to catch up again.
I'm good. Happy to talk to you and honored to be on again.
Well, I know when Illinois hired Bobby Houck, you're a little excited just about the aggression that would come with this defense. So, Matt, I know you've done coaching clinics. You've tried to learn a lot about the game. So let's start here. When you've done those coaching clinic rounds and the 3-3-5 comes up, like, what'd you make of it?
So I think I learned a version of this 2009, 2010 time frame. We had a team in our conference that was really, really good. Actually, they won a state championship or two in that time frame, running a version of the 3-5-3. So the whole evolution of this defense, if you're a history buff, it literally stemmed from the old school 5-3 80s and 90s country cover 3 defense, double eagle, whatever you want to call it, to stop wing T teams that were all the rage in the 80s and 90s. So then they were defense stand-up defensive ends. Then it kind of morphed into teams were spreading people out more, not necessarily in the spread, but there were more receivers and more offenses being played. And so those defensive ends became outside linebackers. And now, you know, that was kind of the 2000s version, small school football version, you might say. And then it's evolved into the three safety version. You even see that a lot at the small school level now due to all the spread offenses and things that you see it at that level as well. But from a clinic perspective, it's been fun and it's been interesting to see how it's changed from it used to be taboo and it turned into more. It's one of the two or three main defenses you see at the high school level. It's just different versions. Now, this specific version is still taboo in my opinion. You watch it on film and it's just the moving pieces are super fun to watch from a football perspective. I'm a pretty structured, like systematic guy. So like seeing all this crazy movement has been fun to really dive into for sure.
Yeah. So why taboo? Why is that a word you use to describe it?
Yeah. Great question. This is exactly what Brett Bielema is looking for. Like when you think of blocking schemes and how teams go to practice. So like most teams, the fundamentals of what they're doing from a technique standpoint, to be honest, most teams, almost all teams are doing the exact same technique. It might look a little different. It might be a little bit different defense or a little bit different structure, whatever you might have it. But what Illinois does breaks all those rules, right? So like they're doing things that aren't done by every team. So a team's going to start off spring practice and the base fundamentals they're going to learn is all set up to stop a very traditional style technique of a defense. What Illinois is doing breaks that rule. So now all of a sudden you're going to go all spring, all fall camp, and then up until you play Illinois and you're going to practice things a certain way. And then you're going to get to that week and then your coach is going to be like, all right, forget everything that you knew. We got to do it differently this week. And that's a huge advantage to Illinois and can help make up for maybe some of those talent deficiencies that you do see. And I think, you know, that's certainly an advantage that Brett Bielema went after. I think I've said this before, but I think the idea here, and I don't think Bielema said this, but you kind of want to be the Army Navy of defense, yeah, right? You want to be that weird week that people have to scheme up and have to do things differently than they do the rest of the year. And they're just not going to be as prepared as you are to be able to do those things. So I think that's what we're looking for here.
Well, I know you've dove into some Montana film here, and I'm sure all the Illini's opponents have done that too, but the personnel is a little bit different here at Illinois, so you can discuss any changes you think happened. But as you kind of dove back into it, Matt, did anything change from your first thoughts on when Hauk got hired?
I don't know if anything necessarily changed. I think they're even more multiple than what I originally anticipated. And there's more crazier stuff that they're doing than what I thought. Now, you know, I say that, but, you know, it's still in the secondary. It's still relatively a structure that you would see all across college football in the NFL. You're not going to see anything crazy. Now, it's a lot different than Aaron Henry ran it. So, and we can get into all of that. But I think they're more multiple all over this defense than what I anticipated. I think what I saw from the Montana film, the things that like carry over to this level would be they were super well prepared and super well coached, and you could tell. And I think that that's something that you can carry over from Montana to Illinois, is that you see how prepared they are when they're in coverages. They know where they're supposed to be. They when they're run fits, they're where they're supposed to be. Their techniques, when you get into the details of how they're stunning and their specific techniques they need to be using, they're using those techniques at a very high level. So, I mean, from a well-coached standpoint, I think that that's probably what I've taken away lately, is like, I really like the idea that has me excited that we're going to see a pretty disciplined defense, even though it's going to look maybe a little bit chaotic at times. They're pretty going to be really well-coached.
Matt, can you explain what multiple means? You know, there's some people out there that aren't, you know, football-y people, but you hear that word multiple from every defensive coordinator now these days. So what does that mean exactly?
Yeah. One great example that I've been thinking about lately, just because, and it's very applicable to us, is the Aaron Henry defense. And by the way, I love Aaron Henry. I was not happy with all the criticism that he got. I didn't think it was justified. However, we did have some issues defensively that had to be addressed. So kudos to Bielema and them for doing that. But
Third down
needed to be addressed. But so like Aaron Henry bragged a lot of times, and he said this multiple times, like, we pretty much run two coverages. We run our man free. We're going to have a post, what he called the post safety in the middle of the field, man free. And then we're going to do a cover two. Now, he called it cover two. It was actually kind of an unconventional cover two. So it did give people some problems, and we had a lot of success with that early on, but teams adapted to it. And that's really all they ran all the time. And there wasn't much multiplicity. What I mean by multiplicity is you're going to see versions of man free from Montana. You're going to see cover three. The cover three and the man free are going to look very similar, to the point to where there are times when I've even thought it's been man free, and then I go back and I watch the play multiple times, and then they're playing a zone coverage there. They're going to start in a too high shell. They'll sometimes stay in a too high coverage. They'll sometimes rotate to a one high coverage. Sometimes they'll fly down into man and blitz six guys. When I say multiple, I mean they're not just running one or two coverages and being very good at those one or two coverages. They're going to run multiple things. They're going to look the same pre-snap or look different pre-snap, and then be in something post-snap. And you're not going to get a beat on that. You're going to have to probably be, from an offensive standpoint, generic's not a very good word, but you're going to have to be generic sometimes, because you're not going to have those tells that you have, or just know what coverage they're going to be in. So you know specifically what play to run to that coverage. You're going to have to run more, you know, I'm going to run a cover four beater to the right side. I'm going to run a man beater to the left side. And depending on what I see post snap, that's where I'm going to go with the ball. You're going to have to do more things like that. You're going to have to put the decision-making on the field with the players. And as a coach, I can tell you from experience, that's when you're the most nervous, is when the guys on the field are having to make the decisions. And I think that's a positive for Illinois as well.
Matt, I think every nerve out there about this defensive front is founded, because Aaron Henry had talented defensive fronts, right? Like, yes, he had Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph, Denzel Daxon, T-Rod Edwards, who's in the NFL last year, James Thompson Jr. and Gabe Backus, right? Like, there was talent up front.
Yeah.
They lost a lot of talent. But let's just talk without that. Let's just talk about the actual scheme. Mm-hmm. What will we see different from the Walters Henry Illinois defense to now, just with how they deploy the defensive line?
Yeah, so there's, in all defensive line play, I played quarterback in high school. I never played a down of defense in all of my time, but I feel like I love talking defensive line play than I like anything else in football. I talk about three different modes. Now, I call them something on the board, but I've kind of changed my tune because it's a little bit simpler and a little bit more of a visual that I wanted to talk about on here. So there's like a base mode of a defensive line play, or like a get off, you might say, the defensive line play. What does base mode mean? That means I'm going to get off the ball in a way that I'm going to try to react off of what the offensive line is doing. I'm not trying to get penetration into the backfield and to wreak havoc in the backfield. I'm looking to control a gap, maybe potentially even control two guys, stay about 1 yard deep, and just hold the line of scrimmage and occupy blockers is what I'm trying to do in base. And there's times every defense runs a base mode. This is Kirby Smart. I stole his terminology. I liked it better. I remember seeing a clinic that he did. I couldn't remember the terminology, and I had to go look it up today. But so the base mode is where Aaron Henry and Terrence Jameson lived most of the time. They weren't, especially their interior front. Now, pass rush guys, you might think, well, yeah, you got the guys on the edge. Yes, they're setting the edge also. There's a base mode to that. They're not being overly aggressive to get in the backfield. Then there's what I would call stunt mode, and that's where we're going to live in now for the most part. Stunt mode is more, I'm going to attack a gap as hard as I can. I'm trying to get into the backfield. I'm trying to turn offensive linemen sideways to create holes, and I'm getting into the backfield, and then I'll react to where what is happening in the backfield once I get there. So the difference is I'm much more aggressive. I'm much more upfield. I might even get past the ball carrier at times if a play is ran a certain way and have to redirect and come back down. It's much more aggressive. I'm not trying to occupy blockers, and that's the mode we're going to play in most of the time. And then there's the jet mode that everybody runs when you're doing blitzing and stunning, and it doesn't matter pass rush or if you're doing some sort of stunt game or something like that, that you just go. You are getting into your gap, your design gap, and you are going and you're trying to wreak havoc. And Illinois will deploy that in many different ways. Illinois is going to use jet mode on run plays and on run defense, which is different than what we've ever seen before. Now, they'll stay in the stunt mode for most of the time, but we probably won't see much base mode at all, if at any. And Aaron Henry and Terrence Jameson pretty much lived there until a third down situation at times. So that's from a schematic standpoint. You're going to see every sort of move and twist and stunt that you can possibly think of. There's going to be times that all four linemen are going to crisscross. There's going to be times where I call it, I don't know what to call it. I don't know what the gurus call it. I don't really get into terminology, you know, the people that get into that, but like, I call it like a wave stunt, where they're going to send three linemen all to one side of the offensive line. And what they're doing is they're trying to prevent, it's really designed for inside zone, outside zone run schemes, that I want to force the ball back to the opposite side to where I have free flowing linebackers and safeties coming downhill to make the play. And they're crossing two gaps to get there. So, I mean, it's like a wave. And you'll notice that Thursday night, that it'll be like a wave of all three linemen going to one side of the formation, and they're trying to get upfield. They're trying to get across linemen. To be honest, the stunting and the crossing, Indiana, like, I didn't give them enough credit for how much they move in their front. And I think, like, I don't think Bielema is ever going to talk about this, but I think that game changed his philosophy on how to go about defending the run and things that you can do.
How many NFL players are on that defensive line? Kamara maybe? Like, that was about it?
Yeah, I mean, they just move and stunt, and they do it out of a very traditional front, but they are constantly stunting and twisting and doing those things. They perfected it. And I think that's more the direction we're going. And it's in a more of an unconventional set. You're going to see the linemen lined up a nose guard with two really wide ends. You're going to see a nose guard with two defensive tackles right next to them. You're going to see an even front that'll look very traditional, like a four-two-five type front. You'll see that as well. You're going to see multiple fronts. They're going to line up in a spot before the snap. They'll figure out the cadence. One thing you're going to see these guys do is they'll get aligned. They'll get set. Once they figure out the cadence, they'll start moving before the snap, and they get false starts that way, especially in key situations on third and shorts and those types of things. They will do that. They will attempt to throw you off sides, and it's just part of their gamemanship and the things. And Bielema loves that stuff. You know he does. Yeah. So, like, he probably plays right into that. And so that's from a defensive line standpoint. It's going to be a lot of fun for people that like line play. Jeremy, you're going to be one that's going to love to watch this defensive line. I just hope, you know, like, we'll get into probably that later, but, you know, will that make up for the talent deficiency that they have?
But, yeah, we'll talk about that here in a moment. So linebackers in concert with that, because that's a big part of this defensive front. I keep saying like linebackers all of a sudden got really important at work, but this is fun linebacker play. Tell me what these two off-ball linebackers do and what this Mike role. I'm just fascinated by what this is going to be with some guys we don't know much about, Mason Moragan, Ian Ray, and then hopefully Daniel Brown gets back at some point.
Yeah, so the field and boundary off-ball linebacker, I think they're calling them
field and boundary.
Inside linebackers, or I don't know what they're actually calling them, but they're essentially your more traditional linebackers that you would see on the field. Now, the field linebacker is more of your the Lovie Smith defense, the Sam linebacker, more of your coverage linebacker, your more athletic version. He's going to play in space more. He's to the field. If you think about it, this game is played on the boundaries more and more all the time. They're going left and going right, and so you're sticking into the boundaries a lot more. So this guy is playing in space, so he's probably more of your safety linebacker hybrid almost at times. Now they play more traditional linebackers in both those spots, but he's going to be your more athletic one. The boundary linebacker is probably more of your traditional, will linebacker, Lance Briggs, that he's still an in the box linebacker. He does have some responsibilities, outside the box and in pass coverage and those types of things, but he's covering less space. So they're probably going to put their more bigger linebacker, probably their better tackler, their better blitzers that position. If they're going to bring a fifth linebacker or a fifth player, he's probably the one that's coming more times than not because they can deploy him in different ways. He's going to look like the Mike linebacker a lot in the way they line up. You're going to see James Kreutz over the ball almost like, well, he's the Mike linebacker, and you're not wrong. These positions are a little bit all over the place. But then that Mike position, like the chief position's getting all the rage. But that Mike position is awesome. I mean, the way they use him and the way they go about it is really, really fun. That guy was actually their leading tackler last year. I don't think that's common. I think he was just their best defensive player, and he made a lot of plays. But watching the film, one of the things they do with him, you think about like Mason Moragan was an outside linebacker rush player. Now all of a sudden he's a Mike linebacker. You can't think of him as a traditional Mike linebacker because he's really – when you break it down to the bare bones of things, he's really their fourth defensive lineman. Right. Now they're going to deploy him different ways. Now, if he's in the box, because he very well, he'll look like a Mike linebacker at times, but he's probably coming off. He's probably coming on a blitz when the snap occurs, not from distance, not really on the line of scrimmage, but from distance, he's probably coming on a blitz. Now that could be anywhere from the A to C gap on either side of the ball or on either side, the right or the left side. And that gives you the flexibility to really do a ton of different things. How fun is that? I mean, you can blitz him literally anywhere. But then they'll also line him up to the field, and they'll line him up to the boundary as that rush defensive end, which, in today's offenses, you see a lot of, boundary and field. That's how teams are kind of doing things now. It's to the boundary, to the field. Formation to the boundary is a huge, huge thing now and all those things. We can now, if we're anticipating something to the field, we can do things to put that Mike linebacker to the field. So we're bringing pressure right where you're wanting to do something. Or we can bring it from the boundary where maybe you're outnumbering them. There are just so many possibilities and so many things that you can do with these players, with that player specifically, to bring pressure. And you're always going to have to be aware of where he is. Now, having said that.
Can I interrupt you for one thing, Matt? Keep your thought. I just want to whiteboard something for people because we've said it over and over again, and I don't want to assume people know this. The boundary side is the short side of the field. So if it's on a hash, the shorter side of the field is the boundary. The wide side of the field is the –
Let's say the ball is right here. Yeah. That way is the boundary.
Correct. I just want people to know that. They're probably like, what does field and boundary mean? So go ahead,
Matt. Yeah, sure. They can literally line them up all over the place, bring them from all over the place. And it just gives so much versatility to the front and allows you to do so many things. And so it was always very puzzling to me. Like I kept hearing Daniel Brown, Mason Moragan, and some of these guys are playing that position. I'm like, what in the world? But it really does make sense now. They don't really put them into coverage hardly ever. If they do, it's more of a over the ball, looking for a crosser type thing that, you can do with even defensive linemen at times. And they do, but it's a really fun position that I'm probably even more excited than what the cheap position or the nickel position is going to do.
Yeah. So basically that Mike linebacker, you think of middle linebacker over the center or whatever it is in the A gaps. Like he could be, but he's probably coming on a blitz or he's going to be a defensive end. Like it's just, you can line him up all over the field and that's going to be so fun to watch. So,
well, and they'll start him at one spot and he'll blitz to the other side of the offensive line. Like they're going to bring him from all over the place and you never know when he's coming. I think I was going to say one of the things that I have picked up on is I think if these guys are really good. I don't know how many analysts are looking at very specific things. If I'm playing against Illinois, I'm finding tendencies where that Mike linebacker aligns. I just think that that's a tendency, something to look out for. If they start to see things, now the Chiefs the same way in the nickel, if they align them certain ways, now you can start to see tendencies of what the defense does. So it'll be very curious. I'll be very curious to see how goes about that and where they bring them, because I think there is some tendencies to how they align that Mike linebacker.
That's a game within the game, is those tendency breakers. How do you mess with them like that way? All right. We talked about that Mike role. As the coaches at Illinois have said, like coverages are coverages. We're not going to bring anything really unique here. Yeah. But the chief and nickel roles, these are again, two pieces that are really versatile in this defense. So how are they going to use Matthew Bailey in that chief role and then Xavier Scott in that nickel role?
Yeah, so starting it with the nickel and Xavier Scott, I think we're going to see Xavier Scott being Xavier Scott, doing the things that he did that made him so good a couple of years ago, coming up and playing physical on the slot receivers, playing man-to-man in that position. We're going to see him blitz. We're going to see him blitz more than what we have in the past, and I think he's a really good blitzer. Maybe not Devin Witherspoon, good defensive back blitzer, but, I mean, he has that style of play to him that he can do that. He's a very violent blitzer. There's just some people that just have a knack for it. He seems to have that, and I think we'll see that, and I think they'll deploy that a lot. They love to blitz when people like bunch formations. They love to blitz defensive backs because they can act like they're playing the receiver and they blitz those guys. And I think we'll see him do that a lot. He will play a deep safety. I think there's like one of the other things that will really be good for Xavier Scott, because he's a playmaker and he's a smart veteran player, is they'll put him in positions. Like one of the things that I've seen on the Montana film is their defensive backs, and when they play zone coverage, I'm guessing this is something that they coach and maybe just a philosophical thing that they do. Bobby Hawk was actually defensive back way back when, and that's where he started coaching, was defensive backs. They watch the eyes of the QB way a lot more than I feel like I traditionally notice with defensive backs. So I think when he does drop as that deep third safety or maybe a deep quarter player, he's going to have his eyes on the QB. He's going to be given a little bit more freedom to play more free, to be able to base his decision-making off the eyes of the QB and anticipate some things and make some plays. So I think that is going to be really, really good for Xavier Scott. And essentially his strengths tie right into what that position wants to do. He's a great tackler. He's aggressive. He's violent. Like I said, I think that all of things bode well for him in that position.
And then we've talked about this chief role a little bit. Basically the Lobo role of what Brian Urlacher did. It's going to be interesting because you'll see him line up where the free safety usually lines up, or you'll see him in some other spots, and just seeing a little bit in training camp, it's a fun position to watch, Matt. So what do you expect out of Matt Bailey in that chief role?
I expect what I get right here. That triangle that you see, that's really his position. Now he's going to line up in different spots, but really the way they view this position is in the run fit. They want this person to be what I would call the seventh run fitter that you can't really account for in traditional sets, like a five offensive line with an H-back or a tight end is what you traditionally see 80%+ of the time in college football. They can't really account for that seventh run fitter. And so with their stunts and blitzes, him coming from depth from that 7-yardish range, the way they stunt and the way they get linemen's bodies turned, there are clear alleys that are very open window type pictures that you see from this position, that he can really see things happen in front of him, and they funnel things to this position.
It's almost like he's a running back. They're setting things up for a running back.
100%. That's a great analogy, because that's exactly what they're doing a lot of times, is funneling things to where he can make the play. Now, on top of that, I mean, it's a big responsibility. They put him in, they kind of run what, you know, they're one of their two main coverages. They run the cover three stuff where he'd be kind of a, he'd end up to be like a hook curl zone type player, but they also run man free with like a robber. And what I mean by robber is he's not necessarily, he's the extra defensive back too. He's not necessarily responsible for a specific receiver, and he's really the quarterback player, right? So he can read the quarterback's eyes when they, you know, in the RPO game or something, he can read the quarterback's eyes and react late in order to be there to make the play or get there. Now, I felt like Montana wasn't very good at this last year. Maybe it was just, they just didn't have the talent, but I wasn't all that impressed with the pass coverage. And I don't think that's his strength either, but at the same time, you know, that is a super cool position that if you have a really true playmaker there, that can be a big deal. They will drop him deep as well. That certainly is not his strength either. I think you'll see him around the line of scrimmage. I think you'll see him going, you know, C gap to C gap, flying around, trying to cover crossers and maybe some tight ends and things in the pass game. I think they'll stay away from dropping him deep, but that fits him. I think that hybrid position is really a good position for him for sure.
I don't want to not ask about the other positions. So corners, I mean, they're playing coverage. And then boundary safety, Matt Krusevich in a role that I think he's going to thrive in this defense. Yeah. Anything you want to hit on there?
Well, first off, Matt Krusevich, I still have nightmares of how many touchdowns he scored against us in high school. We played him four times, and I don't know. I should go back and literally look, but he scored 12-plus touchdowns on us in 4 years, at least. I mean,
great athlete, man.
The guy was an absolute animal. I was always cheering for him. I hope he has a tremendous season. I think that position really fits him well. I think it's that boundary safety position isn't that much different than the post safety that Aaron Henry deployed. So I think it's probably an easier transition for him because that's the role he played a lot. But I do think there's some more, there's more to that position now. There's more coverages. There's more things he's going to be asked to do. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But I think from all accounts, he's approached the offseason the right way. He's went about it in a professional manner. And he's one guy that I think can really stand out with all the experience that he has and taking over from a really good player in Miles Scott. I think that he's up for the challenge this year. The two corners are very traditional. Like I wouldn't say they play their corners any different than most. Now I was very impressed with the Montana corners. Like I think they were well coached. I think they were physical. I think they played with an edge that fits really what we got there with Juice Clark, Jaquan Morris, and how we've kind of traditionally played with those corners. I like getting back to man-to-man, you know, the match three coverage that we'll see. The match three and the man-to-man is really their two main. Now they'll run a lot of different stuff, but that's even match three is really man-to-man. You know, when you think of cover three, for people that don't know, cover three is more of a, you know, you get to a spot, the corners have a deep third of the field. So you, old school way is you drop to a specific basically point, like a flag on the field. Like I got to get 15 yards deep between the hash and the numbers. That's not really how cover three is played anymore or any zone coverage is played. It's pretty much, and it's, that's why it'll look very similar, is it's pretty much match cover three is I am man to man on this receiver unless on the snap he goes underneath or under 5 yards he goes out or in or something like that. And that's more of the type of coverage that we will be playing. And it's super easy, and it's got a super easy rule for these corners that allows them to play free, allows them to play like man to man even though maybe they're not playing man to man, right? And there's this simple read to that that if they're able to rep it over and over like they do at the college level, they can get so good at that. And I think that's a really positive change for those corners. And it fits our guys very, very well.
It's great stuff, man. I think it's great stuff for the fans to kind of look for in week one. So give me, what are you looking for against UAB? It's our first look at what Bobby's going to do. So like, what are you most interested in seeing, saying like, oh, that's something I didn't expect. And this is different than Montana. Or what are you looking for?
Yeah, I did go back and watch like their early 2025 film a little bit just to kind of see like, hey, how basic are they in the front? And they're not basic at all. They ran some double twist stunts and some stuff against Central Washington that they absolutely didn't have to run. So they're going to unleash right away with the things that they do. I guess what I'm most interested in is, do they look Big Ten ready? Does this scheme look Big Ten ready? They're going to see a very good, well-coached scheme from UAB. Alex Mortensen's a really good coach, does a really good job with offense. And so they're going to see a very traditional 11 personnel RPO scheme that they're going to see week in and week out against against Big Ten opponents. And the UAB is going to line up and they're going to try to run zone at them. They're going to try to formation into the boundary, get them a little bit unbalanced, maybe even bring in some big personnel to do that. And they're going to run right at them with inside zone and outside zone. And will they catch Illinois out of gaps? Will they be able to take advantage of mistakes? I want to see them play mistake-free football. I want to see them overwhelm them. I want to see them be able to make up for maybe some being out of gaps and those types of things. Up front, it's going to be all about, do they look like they're a Big Ten defensive line and a Big Ten linebacker crew, or are we a little bit scared about the depth and the talent that's there?
Great point. And that's the question mark, right? When it comes to this staff, this new defensive staff, I don't have questions really about that they know X's and O's or that they can coach fundamentals. Like I trust that they can do that thing. I question if they have the personnel. Even with this scheme, like their acumen's going to have to be good because there are huge question marks about the talent and experience up front.
Yeah. And look, it's still football. Like I'm as big an X's and O's guy in the world, but like nothing outdoes the Jimmys and Joes on the field. If you do not have the talent to get whatever scheme you want to run on the field, you're just not going to win. And it's as simple as that. And so, that's what I'm most concerned about. UAB, should we feel confident about this game 100%? But I want to see them look like a 9-win team in the Big Ten last 2 years, or a 10-win team the last 2 years. I want to see them have that type of effort so that we can kind of breathe easy. Like, all right, we can do this again this season. Until we see it on the field, I'm a little nervous defensively.
For sure. Well, Matt, this was awesome. Thanks for helping making us football smarter and give fans something to look forward to. We'll have to do this again soon. Maybe we'll break down Barry Loney's offense at some point, because what he's doing is unreal. Oh,
he's top notch. Yeah. He's top notch. I'm excited what he learned from Ben Johnson. That'll be fun. Yeah. Some double reverse passes and things.
A lot of tight ends. A lot of 12 personnel this year, I expect. Yeah. Matt Pistol, our coach. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a new season. That, of course, means you need new Illini gear. And we're proud to announce that Game Day Spirit is back as a sponsor of the Illini Inquirer podcast. If you're an Illini fan, you already know Game Day Spirit is the best place to pick up Fighting Illini merchandise in town and online. And with the new season back, you're due to refresh that Illini wardrobe. GameDaySpirit.com is loaded with fresh Illini gear, including Final Four gear to commemorate Illini basketball's great run, new Illini football t-shirts, and, of course, all the latest NIL gear. You can get merch of any of the 100 plus players on the Illini football roster, including jerseys and shirtsies. Game Day Spirit makes it easy with their amazing product selection and two convenient store locations in town at the corner of 6th and Green in Campus Town and at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign. If you're out of the area, out of the state, you can also shop online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. And now, just for Illini Inquirer listeners, they're offering an exclusive discount off your next online purchase. Use code GAMEDAY15 at checkout for 15% off your next purchase online at GameDaySpirit.com. That's code GAMEDAY15 for 15% off your next order at GameDaySpirit.com. Brought to you by the official fan store of the Fighting Illini, Game Day Spirit. All right, let's bring in Joey Wagner. Let's preview Illinois versus UAB. This isn't going to be the six-pack of questions, Joey. We couldn't find a beat writer for UAB very much either. So not going to go too intense on UAB, which finished 4-8 last year, fired Trent Dilfer, and they brought in and promoted their offense coordinator, Alex Mortensen, as they try to figure out what they are after Bill Clark resigned due to health issues. But there's a reason Illinois is a 27.5-point favorite in this one, Joey.
Yeah, and I wrote in our preview, Illinois is getting the benefit of the doubt a little bit this year in year six under Brett Bielema, in the sense of there's so much turnover, there's so much change, and they're still projected to go to a bowl game. Might not sound like a lot, right, to if you're just thinking about where you want this program to be. But the perception of this program to have undergo that much turnover 5-6 years ago, you're not talking about these same things. So the point being, if you're going to be given the benefit of the doubt, you need to kind of go do it, right? Against a team that you're favored by 27.5 points over, and a team that you should have a, I mean, you do have a talent advantage over, especially at the key positions.
Yeah. And this offense is interesting. They beat Memphis last year, who was 6-0 at the time and ranked. So it was a huge win for Alex Mortensen. Don't know if he gets the job if he doesn't do that. They did some good things offensively, but they were truly awful defensively, like one of the worst defensive teams in the country. They returned just 3 starters from last season. One of those is quarterback Ryder Burton, who started some games last year. They have some talented running backs. Rod Robinson transferred from Georgia, where he was a backup. Ben McReynolds was a really good player at Louisiana Monroe. But they only have 2 defensive players over 260 pounds. Ty Grantham is a former SEC defensive coordinator. He's kind of been bouncing around. They hire him to give them some experience there, Joey. But yeah, this is an American Athletic Conference team, but one that is picked to finish second to last in a 14-team conference. So even if Illinois has some questions at defensive front talent, like this is one where Illinois is the far more talented team.
Yeah, and UAP, as you mentioned, they've just got to figure out what it is now after the Trent Dilfer experience went totally sideways. And, you know, Alex Mortensen seems like a pretty bright offensive mind and a guy that, you know, Illinois, I don't think it's just lip service. I think they have a lot of respect for what he does. And I will say, if you're Brett Bielema, the best thing that happened was UAB beat Memphis. So he said that, and every time he's found a microphone, and I would assume that's on the low end of times that he said that over the course of the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's one of those games where you can't count your chickens before they hatch, right? Especially on the inside, because you don't want to get into, I mean, what was it? Was it Central Michigan last year? That it was like 10-10 at halftime, and you're sitting there going like, hey, this is a competitive game. Illinois ran away with it in the second half, but you can find yourself in that trouble. But I would trust Illinois to kind of get this one by the second half. But Joey, let's break it down. Biggest thing you want to see offensively? Just what is the biggest thing you want to see from Barry Loney's offense in week one?
So you can really probably go 2 ways here, but see the quarterback. I want to see what Caden Hauser can do within the scope of this offense, even though I think you might be able to run the ball well. And we'll talk about that here shortly. A little teaser, Jeremy. But I want to see Caden Hauser. I want to see him build that connection, or show that connection, I should say, with Colin Dixon, with Hudson Clement, with Braden Trimble. And we'll see if maybe a younger guy or two gets in there before Brett Bielema typically goes to the backups, if that's how this thing shakes out, which we expect it will. The spread suggests it will. I want to see the quarterback, man. It's the most important position, and it's the one that I think is going to have the biggest hand in what Illinois is able to do this year.
I think week one, I'm going to have a similar thing here. Clean operation. That's, you just want to be able to get to the line of scrimmage, call the play, call the coverage, or call the protection, and just run this clean. You don't want to have a bunch of pre-snap penalties that lead to some, you know, second and 15s or whatever it is. So that's one. I want to see O-line domination, Joey. I know we have question marks about, is this crew gel? They've only had, 4 weeks of practice together. But this is a big physical offensive line. You want to see that shine through. And I know that's one of the biggest things that Bart Miller teaches, is just that mentality of physicality. So I want to see that, because it does have a lot of talent in that front. And if we're getting deeper, I want to see Braden Trimble and Caden Fagan involved in the offense, right? Like, get some glimpses of what these guys look like in new roles. And then, as you said, I'd like to see the backup quarterback in the fourth quarter, whether that's Carson Boyd or Michael Clayton. I think it's Carson Boyd. I'd just like to see him get some snaps in front of, whether it's 50,000 fans or 40,000, whatever it is. I just want to see that quarterback get his feet wet, even if it's handing the ball off most of the time, but just give him a couple throws. Let him get his feet under him. I'd love to see that, because there's not probably going to be many opportunities to do that this year.
Yeah, I don't know that you and I have talked about the backup quarterback outcome since Brett Bielema told us last Friday. It sounds like Carson Boyd has won the job, he said, but then he kind of laid some parameters out, right? I mean, if he has to go in for a series or two or a snap or two, it's Boyd. And then my read was, if it's anything longer, maybe you see what Michael Clayton has. I don't know if that was a similar read that you had. We're talking like 6+ weeks longer, right? We're not talking a couple weeks, because I think they're very intrigued by the talent of Michael Clayton.
Yeah, my read throughout this camp is that I don't think Carson Boyd ran away with this job. I think they trust him to go into a game and they can run an offense, maybe more around his legs. Not that he's not a good, talented thrower, but that they could run an offense around that, which is a lot different. Like, I think it would have been kind of similar to Ethan Hampton. If Ethan Hampton came in, I think you would have seen an offense revolving around the run game, including your quarterback being involved in the run game. But I think Michael Clayton showed better flashes with his arm. Now, I think there were some lows with Michael. Like, we saw some mistakes in the open practice. But we also saw some throws that are like, oh, that guy has the talent to be a Big Ten starter at some point. So the way I read into Brett's comments is Carson is our backup. If we need somebody to go in and manage a game, Carson's our guy right now. But it made me throw up the antenna of Michael might be the best long-term bet as a starter here. Now, he's got to prove that over the rest of the fall and into the spring, and whether Illinois goes with a transfer, we will see. That's kind of my vibe I took from that is Carson's most ready to go into a game and at least keep us competitive, but we might want a longer look at Michael if Caden Hauser was out for a long time because we think he's our long-term starter most likely.
Yeah, and if what that means for 2027, I don't know. And you know what? I don't think they know.
No.
I mean, there's so much that you have to see over the course of practice and whatever, however limited, you know, mop-up duties happen over the course of a game. And at least I hope it's only mop-up duties, right? That means Caden Hauser has been healthy. So I have no idea what that looks like. And I don't know if that's going to be clear to them until November, what that looks like in terms of what they need to attack in the portal, what they don't need to attack in a portal. Obviously, if you turn the keys over to one of Carson Boyd or Michael Clayton, you've got a 1 year cheaper stopgap. I mean, you still have one to year. Kind of get up to where the market is, but in an ideal world, you're either paying that quarterback for the success they had in year one, or the less ideal world, you're finding your quarterback to have more success the following year, and that's going to cost money. So we'll see. I don't know. I thought Brett's comments were interesting in that he didn't just flat out say, like, yes, Mike, it's Carson Boyd, which I'm happy for the transparency, but that definitely leads us to read into it a little bit.
Yeah, and my thing when it comes to like, hey, when are we ever going to have a high school quarterback? I don't care. Like, at that position, you got to get it right. And I don't think there's any extra bonus points for having a kid that was a high school quarterback, except for 1 year where he's probably cheaper. But then the next year, like, Minnesota's paying Drake Lindsey now, right? And they had to pay through some ups and downs. They made a bowl game with him last year. But now, like, you have to pay that guy, most likely market value. So, listen, there's upside to it. But if there's a position I'm not concerned to pay for, it's quarterback. Because I'd rather pay for that quarterback, even if it forces a guy out. Like, Illinois with the transfers has done unbelievably well. So, I'm with you, Joey. I don't think Illinois knows exactly who its starting quarterback will be next year. That's why they continue to practice. They continue to develop these guys. But my read is, like, if they went into next year without adding a transfer, I'd have Michael Clayton as a slight favorite. But I still think Carson Boyd's, like, he's got time. I mean, he's obviously probably won the backup job here. We'll see that for sure, likely on Thursday. But I think it's a tight battle. And I think Michael Clayton just – you hear them rave about the talent, the arm talent, and I think they love that upside.
Yeah, I'm with you. We got that out of the way, but I knew we hadn't talked about it, and it's probably something that's going to be, you know, if Illinois things go right for Illinois, that's something that's going to happen nearing midnight on Thursday night.
Biggest thing you want to see on the defensive side, Joey, the debut of Bobby Houck's defense.
Yeah, I want to see the aggression. I want to see the speed, and that doesn't mean – unload every blitz package you have in the chamber, because you would like to catch Duke off guard. You would like to catch Ohio State off guard if you can do that. But it doesn't mean go away from the core things that this defense does. And you can still be aggressive, and you can still send guys, and you can still bring pressure from here and there. Because the truth is, you also do want some of that on film.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want just to totally – you want to freak out the Duke coaching staff of, okay, where are they going to send guys from? What's going to happen? Like that – For as much value as secrecy, and there is, and Illinois clearly leaned into that, there's value of letting them know that we'll get a little wild and exotic out here defensively and bring pressure. So I just want to see that happen. I want to see some guys in the face of the quarterback. I want to see some tackles for loss. I want to see some takeaways. I want to see the things that we've been told this defense is built on doing happen.
Build me a bicycle clown, entertain me. That's what I want to see in this game. I want to see havoc. I want to see disruption. I want to see, as you said, what this defense is all about. I want to see a new identity, because I think a new identity was needed. Now, success against UAB does not mean success against Duke, but I'd rather see success against UAB. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see. Again, the other part is, with all that aggression, I still want to see clean and assignment sound, right? Like, I want to see guys that were taught fundamentals well, they're in the right gap assignments, run assignments, and they're tackling well. Because I think tackling well is going to be very, very key to this defense succeeding against the run this season. And then, Joey, part of that is like, I want to see them free and flying around. I don't want to see them thinking. I want to see them having fun themselves doing this.
This is such a fun dynamic because I'm just like, bring all the chaos, all the, hey, listen, let's be clean. Let's be fundamental. And you're right.
I'm with you. I said entertain me. Buy me a bicycle, all right?
Yeah, I'm with you. You can't have it sloppy. And especially offensively, as you mentioned, the pre-snap penalties. Defensively, you don't want to see that missed tackle number high, right? I think that's a big thing because you should be in the right position to make those plays. UAB's, you got skill guys. You're going to have a couple. Yeah. But you don't want to go into Duke looking at this like, man, they missed double-digit tackles. Uh-oh. You know, this might not be good against Duke.
All right, Joey, give me your first pick to click of the year. Offense, who you got?
So I didn't know who you were going to take, and I sit here and know you well enough to know there are probably two options. So I may step on your feet with the offensive line.
I got three options, and not one of them was that. So, yeah, go.
Really? Yeah, I think this is a chance for this offensive line to come out and just kind of assert who they think they can be and who they want to be this season. And to do that, I was thinking as I was walking the dog at 7 o'clock this morning what those parameters would look like. And I knew I couldn't say that without putting some sort of guidelines on it. It's probably 200 rush yards, yeah, just to go be physical as hell, move guys. And then fewer than 5 combined sacks and tackles for loss. Keep UAB out of your backfield. Keep your quarterback protected. Give your running backs lanes to get downhill and go be assertive. And you're right. They've had collectively – this is kind of the interesting caveat with this offensive line, because for the most part, they've had all 5 guys only for fall camp, right? Now, how much do you want to kind of put some different ideas in that where they had all 4 minus Renfro for the spring? And if you're slotting anyone in – kind of late in the game to pick everything back up and build that continuity and maybe, you know, bend a little bit extra one way or the other just to make your guards feel comfortable, I'll take the 7th-year guy who's been around as long as Jake Renfro. So I feel better that the one missing piece they had in the spring was him. I know Brandon Henderson was out a little bit in the spring because I think he's just such an easy guy to slot in there. And TJ McMillan was able to get everything else going in the spring. So that's kind of the only thing is you know, I do feel better about that, though you would have liked all 5 of those guys going from the spring into the summer and fall.
I love the parameters you put on that. Love every idea of it. I thought of Hudson Clement because the one practice we saw him and Caden Hauser were connecting really well. I don't want to overthink this. I know we've been Aiden Loughry choo-chooing that train here recently. Let's go back to number 5. Feed 5. Khalil Valentine. I think he has his first 100-yard game. Which he needs to do, right? I want to see him be a little bit of a workhorse. I want to see him get 12 to 15 touches, Joey, before the fourth quarter starts. So I'd really like to see Khalil Valentine be a feature, get him going, because he's so important to what this offense is. I can go back to what we kind of talked about in the spring. It's like, we should talk about this guy more because he's probably going to get more carries than any running back since Chase Brown. I think that starts here. Like, you want to have that identity with your offensive line, your running attack to set up Caden Hauser and this passing attack. Number 5's got to be a big part of it. So I just don't want to overthink this. Like, Khalil Valentine is a huge part of this team. Week 1, that's when usually these guys have a great opportunity to bust 1 or 2 long ones. I think Valentine's got that shot. Loughry does too. I could have gone with either one of those guys, but I just wanted to focus on Valentine.
Yeah, count me in as the overthinking a little bit with Khalil Valentine, because in the spring I was not. I've done like the reverse Fagan a little bit on this, just because I believe so much in what I've seen out of like the limited we've seen out of Aiden Loughry, and I know how much they value him. But I am guilty of kind of getting lost in the, I think Khalil Valentine's going to have a really, really good year. And you're right, this is a good way to kickstart that. How much will they give him the full 15 or 12 to 15? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's, I think there's a lot that Brett wants to showcase here and kind of put out there, and Barry wants to showcase. And that includes Aiden and Jordan Anderson too, because I think this is also a chance to get Jordan Anderson some reps, which kind of gives me a little bit of pause on Valentine. But he can also break a couple. And, you know, whether that's a pair of 20 plus, you know, whatever that looks, doesn't have to be 50 or anything like that. I like it. I like it. I just think that I am in the overthinking mode. It's been a long off season.
Yeah, because we sit there and go, hey, we're going to go with this guy. It's kind of like last year. It's like, Hank Beatty's just sitting there for us. Why don't we talk about him more and project?
And they were screaming his name at us. And we're like, well, listen, I don't know. You know, that's how we approach that the whole time. Like, guys, Hank.
Yeah. All right, pick to click. Defense, Joey, who you got here?
Who did I have here? Oh, I went kind of far off the path a little bit. I'm going with Ish Conte.
I like it.
I wanted to get, you know, I didn't want to just lean into the stars or, you know, someone on, you know, that defensive line. We've heard a lot about Ish Conte, and it's not quite Beatty. You know, it's not like we heard about Hank and we kind of, you know, along those lines, not ignored it, but overlooked it.
Yeah.
And his name comes up a lot, and they seem to really like his fit in this defense. And every time we talk about it, we put the necessary parameters of, he's got really limited snaps and all of these things. At the end of the day, man, they're talking about him like a guy who's going to have a big impact on this linebacker rotation. So let's see it. Let's see game one to get him out there and flying around and be the fit in this defense that he thinks he is, that Roger Cooper has said he is, and that the staff has said he is.
I love it. All my choices were linebackers, Joey, because I do think this is a linebacker showcase game where the one thing UAB has that concerns me in this matchup is running backs. Like, they have some really talented guys that have produced at this level or have pedigree. So I think these guys got to shine. I want to go James Crouse after the practice we saw, but I'm going to keep chewing. It's Mason Morgan. I am fascinated by this Mike position, getting after the quarterback, stopping the run. They have raved about him all offseason, Archie McDaniel especially, and then we've seen Bobby Houck and Brett Bielema rave about him. So I have no idea what to expect. I just know he's a huge part of their defense, and I think he's in a position that is fed to make plays. We just talked about it with Matt Pistol here on the podcast. I thought he broke it down great. So I'm all aboard the Morgan train. I'm rooting for that storyline because it'd be a fun one to talk about and write about after the game.
Yeah, it'd be an awesome story for him to have that opportunity. I also am not asleep on the Ian Rea train.
Yeah.
At this point, with him at Mike, I'm that is the guy who also fascinates me. Not to look past Mason Morgan, because the way they've talked about him in training camp, I don't know that anyone has gotten more buzz. Like, Jay Sean had it a lot in spring, and then
Got hurt. Braden Trimble and Mason Morgan would be the biggest stock risers of. I mean, mostly because of injuries and opportunity, but also because of how the staff talks about him, right?
Yeah, an honorable mention, maybe. Caden Fagan, honorable mention, just because he's now further into this tight end. But defensively, I don't think it's close in the sense that it's been Morgan and the way they've gone about talking about him. So I'm interested. I'm interested too. And, you know, again, we talked about it yesterday. How long is Daniel Brown going to be out? How many games is he going to be available? This is a big chance for Mason Morgan to put a big first impression for everybody outside of that building on tape.
Now I feel like I'm talking too much about him, putting too much pressure on the kid. So maybe I should have gone with James Crouse.
Dog days. You know what? We were better at our jobs with week zero games, where we had one week to cut out some of these questions.
Well, next year we get that new schedule. We all get week zero.
Week one to you, buddy.
All right, bold prediction, offense, Joey. I'll let you lead with this one.
Can I go first? Yes, but if you steal it, I'm going to be curious.
I'm going with
old. I think we're on the same page.
I'm going with old reliable. Jordan Anderson touchdown.
Yes. Stealing my bit. What's your game here?
They're going to get him the ball, right? There's a kid they love that they have, you know, quietly praised a lot when talking about this running back room. Brett has talked about, you know, he's a starter in certain formations. I would imagine that's towards the goal line. And, you know, the short yardage packages. So I just feel like Jordan Anderson, if you get within the five, they're going to find a way to get him a touch, or it's him or Caden Fagan, which are pretty good options inside the five. But I just think senior, you know, fifth year guy, I should say, in his last year, if you get the opportunity to give him the ball, I think they're going to do it to reward him.
There's a little overlap in how Barry Lunny talks about Jordan Anderson, just in terms of their value to that building, as there was with how he talked about Pat Bryant.
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of the willing to do whatever is asked. And that stuff, when you hear that and you know what that means to Barry for Jordan to say, yeah, I'll go do this and I'll go do that, there's typically a reward somewhere baked into that on the other end. Pat's reward was obviously a monster season, and sounds like he's going into a big year with Denver. But this feels like a chance this season for Jordan to have a lot more of those nuggets baked in. Obviously, you still want to go to Valentine and Lawford, but I think Anderson's going to have those opportunities. I flirted with that idea too, and I do think that's what like mostly concerns me with like the Khalil pick to click, because I think this is a great reward Jordan opportunity. Yeah. I'm going to stay with the other reliable outcome here. 2 touchdowns for Caden Fagan.
Nice.
I like it.
We are on path to take that tight end touchdown record with the large, large number of 6. So we'll get a third of the way
there. Gets a third of the way there in one game.
It feels to me, one, the way they've talked about him, gets a chance to infuse some confidence, game confidence in him by trusting him with the ball, both in, as play callers and the quarterback trusting him to get the ball. Also, he's pretty athletic.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just some like, hey, buddy, good for you, chance to give him the ball. It's, hey, you can really help us on this football team, and you're a pretty good threat to get in the end zone and a lot of different opportunities. So I will take B. Fagan on this one, and especially in the red zone.
I was thinking about one touchdown for Caden Fagan, but you went 2. That's bold, Joey. I love it. I love it.
Are we bold or are we not bold?
I thought Anderson was a bold one.
Tell me what we're doing here.
Bold prediction defense, Joey. What do you got?
I have Illinois gets 3 takeaways against UAB. If we're going to be talking about this team as an aggressive team, a man team, with the secondary that they have, the ability for Matt Bailey in particular to just trick quarterbacks who maybe haven't seen this scheme and this ability to disguise, they'll do it. I don't know. The hard part when I say takeaways, you knew Dylan Rosiak was somehow good for a few punch outs this season. I don't know who that falls to. Maybe James Cruz, now that he's not having clubs on his hand that we've seen for the better part of the last few years.
Bailey.
This just feels like an interception opportunity for Illinois and a chance for some of these defensive backs to show why they are talked about as the strength collectively of this team.
I like it. My bold prediction, Illinois has 10 more third down stops than it allows conversions. Does that make sense? So it'd be like 4 of 14. Like I think they have 10 more third down stops than actual conversions, which would probably be like a 25% conversion rate. I'm excited to see a different third down defense deployed. That's what this is.
I was going to ask you, is there a single defensive stat that you're more excited to see this year than third down?
No, it's all third down. If Aaron Henry had a 37% third down rate, which is probably average, he would still be here.
Yeah, I'd say that's right. It is. It was just. It's brutal.
It's 45%.
Absolutely brutal.
Years. Yeah.
You can't have that. And just some of the ways that, not even that the other teams convert them, just some of the ways that it happened. It's like, is there going to be any resistance here for these teams to pick up third downs or first downs on third? So I like it. I think that's a good one for this and Southern, and I don't know that you would touch that again for the rest of the year.
Hopefully I do at some point, but yes, I figured this is the one I have to bring it up and just kind of ram home that point of third down. Defense needs to change. Joey, I am tapped out. I got nothing else to talk about preseason. I am done talking about what could happen in the whole season. I'm ready to talk about what will happen. And yes, we will do our post-game podcast live probably after midnight Friday morning after this game is complete because we needed an 8 p.m. kickoff, BTN. Thank you.
Picture it. The world's largest scoreboard is a backdrop for our podcast. I think it's just beautiful.
The orange glow will be hitting our faces. Yes.
Oh, yeah. It'll just be really stellar, and we can finally talk about the scoreboard. I don't think it's been covered to this point.
What else are you looking forward to besides your post-game scoreboard story?
Pretty much it. Jarling's in the press box. I might mess around and try one of those block eye pretzels.
Ooh.
I'm a sucker for soft pretzels. Really, the cheese has to be right, which is probably my bigger question.
I had to tag you on the UCF sword pretzels. That's thinking big time there.
I like the pretzels are starting to get their due. You know, like it's kind of a slept on stadium. Like, oh, yeah, you can go get a pretzel, I suppose. Now we're starting to do creative stuff with them. Yeah. I think we need to just gas up pretzels more.
Something about the old reliable. Like I'm going to the White Sox game on Friday night and just getting the best hot dog in baseball. Man, just keep it simple. Just do the simple things well. You don't need all these like milkshakes and all that stuff.
a Friday night to go to the White Sox game.
Yeah, it's awesome. Man,
shout out. We are the only ones, by the way, and I know people are going to be pissed when I say this, but shout out to Thursday night games because that gives a full Labor Day weekend, and I understand what it means to the fans, so don't come at me angry. But for us, that's fun.
I even think Illinois fans, maybe I'm speaking for them, but like a Thursday night against UAB, so you can have the full week one Saturday experience of watching games. That's kind of fun.
Probably depends on where you live in the state.
That's probably right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get it. I 100% get it. Because for as much as we're tired of talking about this, fans who want to come out and see this are tired of listening to us talk about this until you see football.
Hopefully not. Hopefully you're not. But yeah, if you want to stay up with us on Thursday night, we'll be doing our live post-game podcast. So if you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to us, and hit that notifications bell so you know when we go live. And of course, if you wake up in the morning, we'll be there for you, all uploaded in the morning. But Joey, I am ready for football, man. I'm looking forward to it. We still got more content coming throughout the next few days. And if you are not a VIP member, Wednesday is our free VIP day. The paywall is lifted for a day. Enjoy all of our preseason coverage. And if you like what you see, it's 75% off for a VIP membership. That is our best deal of the year. More than $100 of savings for your first year. So go give us a try. Take advantage of that VIP deal. But Joey, I will see you Thursday in the press box, buddy. Looking forward to it.
Bye.
All right, great stuff from Joey Wagner. Always appreciate his time. And Matt Pistol for the great breakdown of Bobby Houck's defense. It's game time. Let's get to it. Everybody, enjoy your Thursday night. Enjoy week one of college football this weekend. As I said, we will do our live post-game podcast right here on the YouTube channel. And, of course, check your podcast feeds for that, uploading right away. But we enjoy when you guys come on with us live on the YouTube channel and interact there. And we get to react to actual Illinois football. Looking forward to it. But for Joey Wagner, Matt Pistol, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.